This is the beginning of class 5.
Sashi Bhagi Jashime Tosham Rira Vinshi Nyende Yampadi Sange Shindu Mithe Uwahi Jogo Sangye Chadam Sangye Chodama Chanchu Badu Dagni Kyasu Chi Dagi Chunyen Dibhe Sanangki Drola Penche Sangye Chupasho Sangye Chodam Sangye Chodama Jubadu dami kasuchi Dagi chumyen dipe sunangi Jola penche sangye jubasho Sangye chudam soki chudama Jubadu dami Suchi Dahi Chunyen Kibbe Sanamki Yola Penche Sange Juhasho.
How to prepare, how to get ready before you do meditation. We said most people fail on that. You know, most people fail because they don't prepare for meditation. Everybody knows how to sit down and close their eyes, but it's the preparation that makes it either go well or go bad. So the first one was preparation. Second one was what? Well, I mean the whole syllabus, the whole structure.
Seven ingredients.
Like the environment of the whole place, right? Yeah. Meaning the whole place where you should meditate and how your friends should be, how the food should be, how your mindset should be, everything. The environment. Mostly physical environment. And the third thing was what? We finished it last time.
Posture.
How to put your body. How to position your body. Right? And now we're going to do the mental part. And I like, Diane did it. We were searching for a word. I think technique she wrote. I like that. Like the mental technique. Like we have the bodily posture. We have what the place should be like. And we have how to prepare. But now you have to track what's going to happen in your mind during the meditation. And that's the main part of the meditation, the subject mind. And later we're going to get into what? What's the last category?
Object.
The object that it meditates on. Okay. So now we're up to number 4 of our big category, which is what's the mental technique? What does your mind do during meditation? And that's going to have 3 parts. The first 2 are these 2. Say nyepa.
Nyepa.
Nyembo?
Nyembo.
Okay, so you can write those down. Nyepa means problem. Na means 5. Number 5. There are 5 problems that come up during your meditation. And these were, the Buddha taught them like 2,500 years ago. They're very interesting. I mean, apparently they come up in everybody's mind sooner or later if you try to meditate. And it's good to know them. The book says it's good to know your enemy before you meet him. Okay? He will come. These 5 will come in your mind. And then to fight them, you have Nyembo Ge. Nyembo means, we call it correction. Okay. Nyembo also means, like if you eat poison, if a snake bites you, you have to take the Nyembo. So it can mean antidote or counteraction. I like, in this case, since it's a problem, this is the correction. It's what step you should take to stop that problem where? In your mind.
Are there 5?
Gate means 8.
Number?
Yeah, number 8. So you've got 5 problems and 8 corrections. Right? After that, which we're not going to do tonight, we'll have the 9 mental states that you go through. So how you know where you are? You know, there's the nine mental states. We're not going to talk about that tonight.
Is it mental problems during meditation, right?
These come up, well, when you hear them, you tell me. They're related to meditation. They come up in your mind as you're trying to meditate. Okay? The first one is very easy. Lelo, say Lelo. Lelo means laziness. Tibetans like this, the word lazy, because it sounds like Lelo. It's like, you remember the word lazy easily. It's one of the first words that a Tibetan learns when he's learning English. Because it starts the same, le, lazy. Lelo, laziness is a little bit of a bad, it's a good word, but it means not wanting to do it really. Not wanting to do what?
Meditate.
Not really wanting to meditate. And there's four antidotes to it. So you use up four corrections on the first. It's a good word, but it means not wanting to do it really. Not wanting to do what?
Meditate.
Not really wanting to meditate. And there's four antidotes to it. So you use up four corrections on the first problem. Okay. Alright? Lelo has four corrections. I'll put the corrections in A, B, C, D, so you don't get them mixed up, okay? You only have to memorize that if you're in the Tibetan. You only have to memorize that if you're in the Tibetan class. Say, Tingyan Zin. La. La. Tepa. Tingyan Zin La.
Tingyan Zin La.
Tepa. Tingyan Zin, you know, maybe? You recognize?
Meditate. One-pointed.
Yeah, it was one of the six kinds of meditation. We talked about there are six Tibetan words for meditation. There are six Sanskrit words for meditation. And this was the most general one, you could say, almost. It's one-pointed state of mind.
That's the translation, one-pointed state of mind.
The definition of it is semsichikpa, which means one-pointed state of mind. And I used to, as I said, I used to wonder what was one-pointed. What does one-pointed mean? What does it mean?
Focused on one thing.
One object, yeah. Focused on one thing. Okay. So one-pointed, you know, you kind of wonder, how can I make my mind into a point, you know? It's not like that. It's like, what's the one object? It's an ability to keep your mind on one object. Every sentient being has tingins in it. It's a semgi samang chu in the Abhidhamma Kosha. It's one of the 10 mental functions that every mind has. A bug has tingins in it. An amoeba has tingins in it. Okay, because it can keep its mind on some food for a few seconds. You know, that's a baby Tingyan Zin. That is Tingyan Zin. Okay? Tingyan Zin La means towards Tingyan Zin. Depa literally means faith. Faith. That's what Mr. Kylie calls Mrs. Kylie. He does. He calls her Depa. That was his code word for her. It's a
river
jake holder. Yeah. It means faith.
Okay,
so you know. Now, it doesn't quite mean faith here, because faith in Western world means, you know, oh, I have faith in the God or something. It's not like that. Here, depa means tangwa, and tangwa means to be attracted towards something because you see its good qualities. It's like admiration. It's like attraction. And that comes when you see the good qualities of something. Okay. It means you're attracted to it. You see something nice in it. Okay. What are the qualities of Tingyan Zin that you could be attracted to? The main one I told you at the beginning. Why are we doing this course? Okay. There's five Buddhist paths. The last one is Buddhahood. The first one is getting sick of life, okay? And the three between are what you have to go through to get to Buddhahood, okay? Which are Dorlam, intellectual understanding of emptiness, Tonglam, direct perception of emptiness, and then Gomlam, getting used to your perception of emptiness and it helps you destroy your what?
Obscurations to missions.
Your bad thoughts, hatred, anger, and not knowing. Okay, so those are the five stages you go through. You don't even reach the first Buddhist path until you are truly sick of this life. You haven't reached the first Buddhist path if you are not completely disgusted with this life. And you want a change. You want something different than ups and down, up and down, up and down, getting older, 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 boring, 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 and ending up in a hospital somewhere, or if you're lucky, a nursing home. There's only two choices. You know, there's only two choices. Now, the last place is the mortuary, okay, if they find your body. Usually they do, okay, but it's the only choice. It's the only way to go. So you must go through those five paths. You must find a way to go through those five paths.
Could you go over the last one?
The fifth path?
No, the third path, the third stage.
Third path is direct perception of emptiness. The second path is the intellectual understanding of emptiness. Before you see emptiness directly, you have to understand it intellectually. The fourth path is called habituation. You're getting used to what you saw in the third path until it slowly helps you destroy all your bad emotions. If you went to the first two courses, you knew all that. And you would have forgotten all that. No.
I was just going to say, this is, what are the names? Are accumulation?
They're called preparation.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you're right. Accumulation, preparation, seed,
habituation, and no more learning.
The fifth path is Buddhahood. If you have bodhicitta, if you don't, then it's just, don't worry about it. It's just nirvana, but don't worry about it. You don't have to know those five. What I'm trying to tell you is this. To move up through those five, when you go from one path to two, and when you go from two to three, and when you go from three to four, you must be in deep meditation. You must be in deep meditation. You only move between the paths in deep meditation. Okay? You can only get deep meditation if you practice it every single day. Otherwise, you'll never be able to get into that meditation.
In that case, the last path, habituation, right?
Inside, it has periods when you're not in meditation, but to move from the fourth to the fifth, to go between, is what I'm saying. You have to be in deep meditation. It doesn't mean you're in deep meditation all that time. It could take thousands of millions of years, but you're not in meditation all the time. But from path number four to path number five, to become a Buddha, the process of losing your last kleshas happens in deep meditation.
Michael.
It's called Dorje Thapa Tingenzin.
Well, then the path of seeing is arrived upon the first time one perceives emptiness.
Directly.
And then one stays at that level without becoming habituated to it.
Right.
For some period
different
of time.
Different schools have different presentations of it. The Abhidharma school says that the path of seeing lasts 15 seconds.
So then immediately you're on the path. So then you would be doing both at once then?
Not both at the same time, no. You can't be on two at once. You can achieve two paths in one meditation period, yeah.
Well, it sounds like you'd have to in that case.
In that presentation, the Abhidharma presentation. So, to get that kind of meditation, to be able to get that kind of meditation, you have to be doing it every day. You can miss maybe one day a week. You see what I mean? You have to be doing it every day. You have to be practicing it every day. And you have to be doing it right. And if you don't, it's impossible to reach that kind of meditation. It's impossible. You never will. And then what? You'll never get up through those paths. It's impossible. It won't happen.
You said something, I don't know if I'm missing, did not hear you clearly. You said that once you see emptiness, then you have habituation. That means you're starting to, you know, to get rid of anger and all that.
Yeah.
But can
permanently.
But can you do this even before seeing emptiness?
No, because you cannot.
You can still see intellectually that anger causes.
You cannot. That's the whole reason you want to see emptiness directly, because there is no other method to remove anger permanently. You must see emptiness.
Yeah, but you start
directly.
What I'm saying is.
Oh, but before that, you must start.
Yeah, because you see anger causes.
To have enough goodness to reach the lower path, you have to get rid of a lot of anger.
Right, exactly.
But you can't destroy anger. There is
method. That's what you mean, destroy.
There's no method to remove anger permanently from your mind
except
seeing emptiness directly.
So that's
why people struggle with other paths. That's why they have so much problems. That's why they're so frustrated. Because you can't. It takes that to remove anger from yourself permanently. and that's where it's interesting. So anyway, you have to be in deep meditation to move up to those paths. It's the only way. That's the biggest sales point of meditation, all right? There are other sales points. The Lam Rim Chemo, which is what the booklet we're studying, says you can't achieve almost any Buddhist quality without learning meditation well. Because you have to learn, meditation allows you to learn to keep your mind on an object long enough to achieve it quickly. It gives you one pointedness of direction in your life. It makes your mind, it gives your mind a quality of concentration that you're going to need for all the qualities of Buddhism. That's another selling point.
You can't attain those qualities, you said?
Very difficult without a one-pointed state of mind. Not meaning meditation necessarily. You know, to be able to concentrate at work on myself, on keeping my mouth from saying silly things that hurt people's feelings, which I do all the time, you have to have some kind of one-pointedness. So really to have good morality is also you're going to have some kind of one-pointedness. So to get all of the Buddhist qualities, you need some kind of ability to concentrate. You'll never develop it without shamatha. Okay. The other quality is if you care, and it's supposed to be not very important, if you get good at meditation, you can read other people's minds, you can do miracles. You can do that. It's not a goal. You know, it's no good if you can fly in the sky if you're still getting old and dying. Okay? It's not the main point. You can sit out in the snow, you can get heat. No, there are Buddhist masters who I've met who, you know, the big deal was that he had sat out in the snow for 5 hours or something. That's okay, but he still got old and died. He's already dead, actually. So it's not the goal. It's nice. It's a side effect. Okay. So these are all the qualities of, yeah.
I like the one word thing. What were the 5 1 words of seeing habituation?
Oh, okay.
In order, please.
Accumulation. You can call it gathering if you don't like it. Accumulation is okay. Number 2 is preparation. Sometimes the word doesn't describe what's going on, though. Preparation is where you intellectually start to understand everything. Number 3 is called seeing, with your mind, right? Number 4 is habituation. And then number 5 is called no more learning, finished learning. And that's equivalent to nirvana. And if you want to know why, you have to go to the course next time. Yeah.
There's so many questions to ask, and some of my, for me personally, I sure might be silly, but like according to the posture, if you do a half lotus, does that interfere with the speed of your progress in these 5 things? Like if you can't do a full lotus?
I think we said last time the text said you could do either, and it, no problem.
No interference with anything.
Generally speaking, you have to use common sense in meditation. If you're struggling, and some people do for many months, to attain a certain posture, and you're not meditating, that's a distraction. And we'll learn, we'll talk about it tonight, okay? All right. So, Lelo, the first...
I'm sorry, you can read other people's minds?
Yeah.
Or you can...
You can learn to read other people's minds. You can see the future. You can see what's happening in, in the little
universe.
Town in Mexico right now. Okay. So the first weapon you use against not wanting to meditate, did it ever happen to you? This week? Happened to me one day, I didn't get up. Okay. You just don't want to do it. You really don't want to do it. Why? Because you didn't understand what you're going to get out of it. You know, the reason you get up to go to work, because you get the paycheck every Friday or whatever. You know what you're going to get. But Lelo is very subtle. Lelo means you don't really feel like doing it. And that happens a lot. And I tell you this, on the days that you don't feel like doing it, that's when you especially have to force yourself, because that's when you make progress. The most progress is made on days that you really don't feel like doing it. If you force yourself to sit down and do it on those days, you'll be able to achieve shamatha. And if you don't, you never will. And Tsongkhapa says that in his text. You know, you have to, on the days that you don't feel like it, those are the crucial days. Mm. Those are the days when you make the most progress. Sitting down on those days is the best progress. So that's the first antidote, okay? You just understand why you need it. Some kind of admiration or some attraction to this idea of getting to Samatha. You should be attracted to it. You should think, oh, that's really something wonderful. You should see its good qualities. Okay. Second thing is easy. Say Dumba. Write it first. Dumba means you want it. To want it. Want what?
Emptiness.
No. Shamatha. Okay. The ability to pure meditation. To meditate very deeply. You want it. By the way, these antidotes are all cause and effect. So where does the wanting it come from?
Understanding what it is.
Seeing its nice qualities. Okay. Having attraction for it. Depa is when you check out the girl's face and everything. And Dumba is where you say, okay, I like to get into that. All right, in the world.
So what is Dumba?
Dumba. Oh, Dumba is just one word that means you want it. You want it. Okay. You don't want anything until you see the nice things about it. So this is seeing, A is seeing the nice things about developing shamatha. And B is because of seeing how nice it is, you want it.
Would you categorize that as a sentence, a verb, a noun?
It's a verb.
Oh, just want it.
It's a gerund if you want, verbal noun, wanting it.
So you have patience, the result.
Yeah, by seeing its good qualities, then you want it. Those are different mental functions.
Are you going to explain how you see the good qualities?
I just talked about it. And you have to meditate on it. They say in Buddhism, they often say, meditate on the good qualities of whatever you're supposed to be meditating on. Mm-hmm. I mean, sit down a couple of times and think about it. If you never develop Tingen Zen, if you never develop Shamatha, you will suffer, period. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll go on like you are now. If you are who you seem to be, which I don't know, okay. But if you are who you seem to be, you're stuck. You know, there's no future. Anything you're gonna get, you're gonna lose. Anything that makes you happy now—your face, your health, your job, your friends, your wife, your kids—anything you'll lose. Period. You'll lose it. Okay, that's a bad thing. Wouldn't it be nice to be in some position where you don't have to do this? That's the only selling point you need, I think. You know, if you get tired of getting up at whatever time you're getting up, just think of the alternative. Right, Laura? Like, you know, 1,000 more lifetimes with the same boss, probably. Okay?
No, that's the choice. What is it concretely that you're examining good qualities of the
meditation itself.
But if you haven't experienced it, what do you're sort of... Based on what you've read?
Right. Based on the Buddha saying, these are the good qualities of meditation. Based on that presentation that you have to be in meditation to... Well, you have to be in meditation to see emptiness directly, and you already understand why you need to see emptiness directly. You've learned that already. You cannot see it unless you have this microscope, this ability to concentrate. Mm-hmm. You won't see it. You'll never be able to see it. If you never meditate more than 15 minutes or 14 minutes or 16, whatever you happen to be doing, you'll never see it, period. You'll never see it and you'll go on like this. And time is running out. You're getting older. You know, there'll come a day when you can't sit down nicely and meditate. We have one student who's dying right now. He's over. He doesn't have time now to do that. Okay. And other people have died. So, and we're all getting old. And it's harder to sit when you're old. And it's harder to think. For a long time, so you have to do it now. That's like qualities you should see about meditation. Okay. But it's true, logically, you haven't experienced those good qualities yet. You've just heard someone describe them. But you know the alternative, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like when they say, in our logic debates in the winter, they say, does the Buddha tell the truth about emptiness? I don't know. I didn't see emptiness directly, if you didn't, right? But he sure did describe suffering very well. The Four Noble Truths you know, the one about suffering and its cause, those are nice. I can confirm those. I have experienced those. And no other person really took the time or cared or said anything about them. No one has described the problem so well. You know, for example, that the beginning of a relationship is the cause of its destruction. That's interesting. You know, that's the way it is. It does not need an external cause for it to turn lousy or for it to end. The beginning of it is its destruction. The beginning of it is the cause of its destruction. That's a Buddhist theory. And if you live long enough, you start to say, oh yeah, that starts to make sense. Things like that. Okay. Number C. Okay, Tundra means effort. It's also the name of the fourth perfection. Effort. Trying hard. Trying hard for what?
To meditate.
Okay. Like when I was a teenager, you see the lady, you like her, you see the good qualities, then you want it, and then you go. You try to get it. That's a tundra. Tundra means you're working to get something. Effort. So this is again a result of number B, which was wanting it. First you see its good qualities, then you start to want it, and then you go after it. That's tundra. Tundra means to make effort.
Does the effort have to be joyous?
Well, in the perfection of effort, it's defined as joy. About doing something good, yeah, it will be joyous, but it's not the emphasis in this. This is just what's effort here is to get up on the morning that you don't feel like it, and you'd like to skip the sweeping part, just sit down, didn't we? You know, it's really pretty clean. The students cleaned it last night. That's not tundra, okay? You don't want it bad enough. And you won't get this unless you have want it. And you won't want it unless you understand why it's a good thing, why it's going to help you.
So A needs to be B.
That's the whole point. You must have A to get to B. You must have B to get to C. And C leads to...
D.
Right. I'm a logician.
Until we're ready for the next class to watch it.
Say Xinjiang.
Xinjiang.
Xinjiang. Xinjiang. Xinjiang, I have translated as, I'm not sure I like the translation, but I have to explain it, okay? Some people call it agility. But what it means is when you do something over and over and over and over again, like if you've ever played sports, you know, I used to play tennis in high school, and you know, you hit the ball over and over and over and over again. And then finally, at some point, you reach this place where it's very, very... If you're working hard at it every day, then you reach this point where it's just a piece of cake. It feels so natural. And you get some really wonderful ability to do it, like some kind of... The Tibetans are always saying the example for Xinjiang is people who practice gymnastics until they can just do anything. They can make their body do anything. So Xinjiang can be either mental or physical. Xinjiang is where your body is so used to meditating. You've been in that position so many hours, in so many days. And again, I say, the goal is not to sit down one day and go for 5 hours and then take a month off. You know, like in dieting or like in jogging or like in weightlifting or... anything else you want to learn, it's much better if you can do half an hour a day and never break it. Never break it. If you could just get up and do it each day, you'll get it. And you really should do it the same time each day. And then your clock will go off in your mind. At that moment, you'll want to sit down and meditate. It's very powerful. It's very good. Same time every day, and it becomes like a habit. It becomes part of your life. And then you don't break it. And you must not break it. They say specifically in the text, if you work hard for a couple of weeks and then you just lay off for a couple of days, it's very difficult. And you must do it continually. So Xinjiang, the first part is where you can make your body sit quietly for many hours, maybe 4, 5, 6 hours, if you want to. Your body will do it because it's so used to it. You know, you don't do it the first year. You work up to it. And the second part is mental. You get Xinjiang mentally. So mental Xinjiang means you can make your mind do whatever you want. You're like a gymnast of the mind. Okay? You can make your mind go through any loop you want it to go through. You can force it to stay on one object as long as you want. You can force it to tackle a problem logically and work through it clearly. You can force it to concentrate on any object you want. That's Xinjiang. That's where you get some very, very, I don't know, it's like pleasant feeling from being very good at something. That's what Xinjiang means. There's no good English word. You ever heard of it?
It's a service ability.
That's okay. That's pretty not bad.
What?
Service ability, but I try to keep them under 6. No. Some people say agility is not bad. I mean, that's what the acrobat. It's like, I don't know, it's a result of practicing all the time, and then it's some like really fine feeling. Like you feel like you'll get it. You know, you will get it.
It comes naturally.
It's like
yeah,
a skill.
Yeah, you just sit down and you feel it. It's like a skill.
Dexterity
is very good too. Some people translate it that way. Xinjiang is the actual correction for not wanting to meditate, laziness. This is the actual correction. They say this is the actual correction. The other three are ways to reach this point. So it's when you're really good at meditating that you like to meditate enough to do it every day. It's a kind of a catch-22. You know, when you get good at it, you'll have an investment in it. You'll want to do it every day. I notice this at work all the time. You know, people do what they like to do and not what you need at that. We have a guy in Bangkok who buys the stones, the assistant to your brother. He's supposed to be buying stones, but actually he likes computers. So he makes all these systems to buy the stones, but he doesn't buy the stones. He just works on the systems. When you like to do something, you won't have a problem doing it. When you're good at something, you won't have any problem to get yourself to do it. And that's what Xinjiang is the actual correction for the problem of laziness. But you don't have that at the beginning. The book says that. Lama Nyingma says that. But you don't have it at the beginning. So first of all, you have to think about why you should have it. And then you'll start to go after it. You'll want it, and then you'll go after it. And then when you get really good at it, you'll enjoy doing it every day. You won't be lazy anymore. So this correction is a little tricky. You actually don't have the correction when you start correcting. You build up to the correction. When you get good at it, then you'll want to do it every day, and you won't think, I don't feel like doing it today. You'll be making excuses to get home and do it.
Like the other is pliancy.
Pliancy is pretty good. That's pretty good. Okay. So first problem is what?
Laziness.
I almost don't like the word laziness. It's kind of like not wanting to do it. It's not wanting to meditate. If I say laziness, I don't think anybody in this room says, yeah, I'm really lazy. But if I say, did it happen this week that you didn't really want to get up and do it? Yeah, just about every day.
It's kind of like procrastination.
There's another word for that. But it's like not really wanting to do it. Not feeling like it. Okay? And you get that. Why? Because you didn't see... If you really truly believed in what it could do for you, you would do it every morning. But you don't. So then you don't get to want it much. And because you don't want it much, you don't work hard to get it. Because you don't work hard, you don't get to that point where it's so pleasant that you want to do it.
But what about something else that is stronger at the moment than the desire to do it?
Then contemplate that thing's impermanence. Whatever it is you're thinking of, and I don't know what it is, but I'll bet you you're going to lose it within 5 years. You know, it's something you're going to work for, and it's going to cause you suffering to get it. The Tibetans have a nice phrase. This is maybe dunyan, yubi dunyan. Maybe dunyan means the suffering of not having something, like money. And then yubi dunyan is the suffering you get after you get it. And you have to try to maintain it or hold on to it. Like, it's the suffering of trying to keep on to your money after you get it. So whether you have it or you don't have it, you're suffering either way. That's you must ask this question. She asked it. She's not afraid to ask it out loud. You all of us have this question in our minds now. You really don't want to get up in the morning. You really would rather do something else. Just think about that thing. You know, is it worth it? What are you going to get from it? Okay. Problem number two. Say dhamma. Dhamma is an idiom in Tibetan, and it means like private advice.
Private
instruction. Let's say instruction is better, I think.
Private?
Normally it's in private. Normally it's a lama teaching you something privately, like instruction. Dhamma. It doesn't have to be. Okay. Say instruction. Dhamma. Jepa means to forget. This doesn't. Now, there could be a homework question.
You don't forget it.
Does this actually describe what this thing is? No. It's not forgetting the instructions. It means something different. But this just happens to be the words that were used for hundreds of years. Okay. It's a code word for losing the object.
Losing focus on the object?
Losing the object, period. Like you're supposed to be meditating on a Buddha image mentally, right?
Yeah.
Never visually. And you just find that you've just forgot to do it. You know, like, suddenly whoa, what was I doing, you know?
It's called.
It's just where the object slips away. You lose mentally, of course. Excuse me?
You mean not visually, you are visualizing.
Yeah, but I want to stress that you never meditate on a thing by staring at it with your eyeballs.
No, I'm talking about this.
Yeah, of course if it's a picture you're visualizing, of course it's visualized.
So it's when it completely you use it completely.
This happens a lot, and you know it if you try. By the way, Tsongkhapa says in the text, a lot of these things I can't describe to you really well until it happens to you. And until you meditate a lot, these don't mean a lot. It's like reading a Volkswagen car manual, how to fix it without ever looking at the car. You won't run into the problem until you try, and I can only describe it to you roughly. But on the other hand, if you try a lot, you will encounter these problems. So at least you know you've got some ammunition. But if you never went to this class, but if you tried to meditate a lot, you're aware of all these things already. You know, I mean, you just find that you forgot what you're doing. You lost the object completely. You know, it's like your mind was just—it slips away from you. This is where the object slips away from you.
It's not
that you forget to sit down and meditate. It's that you are meditating and you stop meditating and you didn't realize it.
Well, then your mind wanders.
Yes, it's like a wandering. But it's the stress here is not on the wandering, which comes later. It's that you're just not meditating anymore. The object has slipped away already.
So you're really in a meditating position.
Yeah, all of these take place during the meditation position.
Do you mean you're not meditating anymore, or now you're meditating on a different object?
It's not the stress in problem number two. The stress in problem number two is that you've lost the object.
So this is not coarse wandering then?
No, not talking about that. Just that the object has slipped away.
And you're not meditating.
Does that stop occurring with lots of practice?
Oh, sure. That's the point. Yeah. And a lot of people never realize that. I mean, they go on sitting there, and they get up, and they say, boy, I had a good meditation. I felt good, you know, and everything was smooth. And you say, what did you meditate on? Oh, yeah. It happens.
You know it happens,
right? How about you? The antidote for that, we ran out of. Now it's going to be one to one, right? No, what I mean is the rest of the antidotes are going to be one antidote per problem.
Okay.
I forgot what it was. It's memory. Well, I'll say remembering. It means that. You work with it. I remember that I didn't like a lot of the translations, but I don't remember why. Recall means to forget something and then remember it again. That's what recall means. That's not what it is.
Holding your mind?
It's keeping your mind on it.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. It's like not letting it slip away. I would say awareness, but awareness is coming later. Attentiveness is pretty good.
Vigilance?
Listen,
there's another one that
bring your mind back to the object.
It does not bring your mind back. It keeps it from slipping out in the first place. So what are you going to call that?
Vigilant attentiveness.
Doesn't make us sick.
So how is this an antidote if you're preventing the thing from occurring in the first place?
Well, let me tell you.
We think the antidote has to come after the event.
Well, let me see. I'll tell you what Tsongkhapa says, okay? When you lose the object from your attentive state of mind, the second problem has occurred, and that it's given the name, which is a misnomer, right, for getting the instructions. And he says, the antidote. By the way, I couldn't translate this whole thing this weekend because I took the kids. The Mongolian kids up on a retreat, so I'll try to do it tomorrow, Wednesday, and give it to you on Thursday, okay? It's a lot to translate, but I like it a lot. I think you should have the whole thing. It's really nice. So he says, for example, if you are holding a rosary, because that's all that monks are holding all day long, right, in your hand, It's like holding a rosary in hand. If you have strong Dhamma, then you can, with strong Dhamma, you must keep your mind on the object. He says different people have different capacities of Dhamma. Therefore, for different people, it may be harder or easier to develop shamatha. The Kundu, which is Abhidhamma Samuchaya, says, what is Dhamma? It is that mental function which allows you not to forget an object of the mind because you are used to it. Mm-hmm. You've become accustomed to it. And that's, again, that's similar to the word what?
Habituation.
Gom. Meditation, right? Gom. So you have a sangha, actually. Or is it Vasubandhu? Defining memory, in this case remembering, as that mental function which acts to keep you from forgetting an object of the mind because you are familiar with it. You've become familiar with it. So it's almost more like what? Habituation, in a way. Mm. Mental habituation.
Which is what you do before the meditation, not after you have the problem.
The whole meditation is that, burning it into the mind. But what he's saying is the habit of keeping your mind on it is the antidote to losing it.
Is he essentially saying start over and remember it again?
Yeah. It doesn't seem... I know what you mean. Okay, yeah.
You've lost it, it's gone, so okay, so remember the object, start over, refocus.
That seems pretty good, too.
Yeah.
But it seems like these antidotes, in a way, are sort of like saying, what you do, get yourself ready, because these things are coming.
Mm. Well, it's a good question. If you were in a debate...
Not like afterwards, before. Yeah. You know your mind is going to go away, so put extra tension on it.
That's contrary to the definition of an antidote. You know?
Yeah, but maybe it's...
But I this would be a good debate. You see, this is what we debate in a monastery. Two students take a different position. You know, one person says that the Dhamma, the antidote should be applied before the problem. The antidote is what prevents the problem from occurring. And the other student says, well, it wouldn't be a problem then. You have to have the problem first, and then you apply the antidote. Hmm. You know? And a good question. The word for correction here we're using is duchepo, which means to take action. So it probably, I would say, if I were in a debate ground, and if I were debating it, I would say probably it has to occur after the problem arises. But I don't think it's contradictory in a way. It's a good question.
Well, you could take action to prevent it from arising, or you can take action to get yourself back to where you were.
Right. So I don't think it's contradictory.
So remembering just means recalling.
Recalling if you've lost it.
Yeah.
Remembering not to lose it if you haven't. How's that?
I lost it.
You don't have to worry about it. It's another word for nyambo, but you don't need to know that. I'm just telling you that's another way of translating it.
If this includes being extracted from an object by other thoughts, for example, I don't know how the antidote would work.
By the way,
no matter how familiar you are with the object of meditation.
No, if you're used to it, it comes up easily in your mind more easily. You don't lose it as easily. Let me give you three characteristics since we're on it. He says, I mean, I didn't want to get into this much detail, but I will, since you're interested.
Three characteristics of what?
He's going to give you three qualities of Jemba. You don't need to know these. I wasn't going to talk about them, but since you asked. The first one is the quality of the object. He says you are fixing your mind on an object which you have experienced before and you're very accustomed to. He says, secondly, there's a quality of how it holds its object. A quality of how it holds its object. We're talking about memory now, right? Remembering. It says, it's a natural not forgetting of the object. It comes up in your mind very strongly. A natural not forgetting of the object, which comes up in your mind very strongly. And he says, for example, the way in which food comes to your mind when you get real hungry. how it just hangyawa means how it just pops into your mind very naturally when you're hungry. I had it this at noon today, and a cheese sandwich, you know, came into my mind very clearly around 11:30. It was an hour and a half too early, and I was going around looking for menus, you know. But that's, I was hungry, and it just comes into your mind naturally and very clearly. So that's the how it holds its object. The third quality is its function. It functions not to allow your mind to wander to another object. It functions not to allow your mind to wander to another object. Which again, it's really going to come in the next one more clearly.
What do you do when you can entertain two objects at once?
Nobody can. Tibetans say,
but you can have an image.
They're alternating.
Thoughts and
they're alternating.
French fries are
going through. Yeah, no, they're alternating. The Majjhimika Avatara, the main text by Chandrakirti on emptiness, describes that process. And it says, it's a beautiful image. You take rose petals and you glue them on a target, like a couple of inches, coming out of the target like an inch or two. And he says, when you shoot an arrow into that pile of rose petals, it's like a bullet going through a book. Have you ever seen that movie? He says it looks like fwah, and they went through all the rose petals at once. But what's really happening is, you know, you can't see it with your eye, but mentally you understand it must be penetrating the first rose petal first, and then the next rose petal, and then the next rose petal, and then the next rose petal. So he says when you get this illusion that you're keeping your mind on French fries and the Buddha's
forward.
In the debate ground, you say, come on, Kylie, you know we can't talk about that. I mean, he can do things that no one can do. So in the debate ground, oftentimes when you start a debate, you say, which means, I ain't talking about Buddhists, right? You got it? You got it? We ain't talking about Buddhists, okay? Buddhists are different. Buddhists are different.
It seems to me all of these definitions of what we in English call concentration.
Yeah, you could say that, I think. It must have something to do with memory, and it must not be memory itself, because the word is the word for memory, smriti. But I don't think it obviously doesn't mean simple memory in this case. It means somehow keeping your mind on the object, keeping the object from slipping away. And maybe you have to meditate to experience it, and then you can come back and tell us. I don't know. You know, what is it that keeps the object from fading away?
But you can look at it like that red and that white on the board, mm-hmm. and perceive it at the same time. And it's not alternating thoughts. You perceive both at the same time.
There's a big debate about it. I understand. You believe that you're seeing red and white at the same time.
Yeah, I know it.
It seems like that. I believe with one sense power, it might be possible. Different schools say different. It's a big debate. You know, visually, maybe, two objects at once, red and white at once. You know, French fries and the Buddha? I don't know. I'm thinking the smell of French fries, right?
Yeah. Words come to mind.
Okay, so we'll have some snack now. And then we've got one more to go, one big one. In your mind on one object, he talks about not switching objects. And so Kapha takes a whole couple of pages to talk about that. Because one of the greatest enemies that causes Dhamma to fail is that one of the biggest enemies that causes you to lose the object is that you keep switching objects. He says, don't do that. And the example he gives is, I don't know if you're ever a Boy Scout. Did you ever try to start a fire with one of those things? Two sticks of wood? It's very hard, really hard. We used to try. And in Tibet, I guess it was a pretty common way to start a fire. But you would sit there and rub these two sticks together. And then it gets pretty hot, but it doesn't start a fire. And then you say, oh, let me try another stick. Oh. And he said, it gets pretty hot. Then he said, it's not burning. Let me try another stick. You know? And he says, the greatest enemy is to keep changing the object. He says, pick one object, pick a virtuous object. He says, like the image of a Buddha in your mind, and stick to it until you achieve shamatha. My personal experience is that keep the object for a long time. I think that at some point you get, it's good to have a change of pace sometimes in your daily practice. I mean, I would say, personally, I can keep one thing for about 6 months, and then it gets. And then it's good to get something fresh, you know. Like I tried to meditate on neutrality for 6 months or something, you know. And then after about 6 months, in my personal experience, you start to get tired of it. You know?
Is that a function of the mind, though? Is that a function of the mind that the mind becomes bored and that's not necessarily desirable to switch?
It could be, but
just be analytic meditation.
Yeah, exactly.
Meditation.
Yeah, that thinking.
They're all meditation.
That's different than single-pointedness, really.
We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it next time. There's three kinds of meditation. Okay. Tsongkhapa says, don't switch around your objects. Just pick an object. Don't try to get. I'll tell you one thing that really doesn't work is to try to have two or three going on at one time. You know, like, oh, today I'll try that one. Tomorrow I'll try that one. The Tibetans say you can't sew with a needle that has two points, like. It doesn't work. So it doesn't work. Pick an object and stick to it. And therefore, since you're going to be stuck with this object for months and months, pick a virtuous one.
Did you say that you can also choose your Rupama?
Oh, sure. That would be great.
But there doesn't have to be a Buddha.
We'll study that, actually, this course. We'll give you the answer. Okay, so that's problem number two. Look, by the way, we're not doing all eight tonight, so don't get scared. I'm not keeping you till midnight. Did somebody ask a question?
It says in the homework, do the preparations, and then this week, this class period, meditate on, for example, the six, whatever, seven, or whatever.
Right.
We're doing that.
It means so, review them over and over.
Okay, but then. We should also, at the same time, pick a virtuous object and practice on that independently of the homework, yes?
I would say right now, work on the homework and don't pick a separate object. You know, work on those. Otherwise, you've got how many objects? Two, right?
Mm.
if you know Rinpoche pretty well, he's always, through the years, he's 20 years he's taught. In fact, we were talking with Brenda about that. She used to work for the man who brought him here, who paid for him to come here. And for 20 years he sat in that house. He didn't go out much. And he didn't change the... His policy about all this stuff was, look, you go home and do it, okay? We didn't have group meditations, and we didn't, you know, it was all, that's your problem. I'll teach you how to do it, you know? And then, that's the end of my, that's all I can do. You know, really, you have to go do it yourself. You know? So this is number, what, 3?
3.
Yes. These things, again, they don't have good words in English. Chinghua.
Chingwa.
Chingwa means it's very hard to translate. You can say dullness. I'm saying dullness, mental dullness in the in your translation, that's what you'll see. There are many, many words that people use. I don't know what's the best one. To me it feels like mental dullness when I get it. Okay. Gupa is the opposite. Gupa is when your mind is... The word for...
There are not enough words there.
Well, gu, okay, I'll say gu.
Okay.
Gu means, actually the literal meaning is wild. Like a mirgu. Mirgu, it means a gorilla. It literally means wild man. Okay. But gupa means... I don't know what to say. Excited or stirred up?
Agitated
is great. Agitated is pretty good. Excuse me?
We're talking about...
Gu.
Ching gu?
Yeah. Just the gu part means agitated. The ching part means dull. Dullness. They are opposites.
How do you spell it?
In English? In Roman?
What do you mean the dull?
She doesn't
dull. Oh, no, you help her. Spell it for her. I'll spell dullness.
Dullness.
Oh,
D-U-L-L. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Chingut. Now I'm going to read from Tsongkhapa. Gupa is pretty easy. Chinghua you have to study. Chinghua is the most dangerous enemy in meditation, period, of all. Okay? And I'll just read it to you. Chinghua la chalang ni le, which means Chinghua has two forms. One is the obvious form, and one is the subtle form. So you can get ching, which is the full word is called chinghua, okay? Ching. You can get this dullness either in a very obvious way or in a very subtle way. Okay. And for me to explain this to you, I have to teach you two more words, and you have to learn these words. I mean, in English, I guess. By the way, I told you something. That we're not. This presentation is coming from Avoca's Lamrim, which is modeled after Tsongkhapa's Lamrim. And I'm not going to ask you that, so don't worry about it. But that's the. He wrote the second great famous Lamrim.
When?
He died in 1941. He wrote the book in 1921.
Yeah,
the lectures. Born in
78
something. He taught my Lama. He was very, very famous. And he taught the Dalai Lama's teacher. Necha and Selcha. Ne means to stay. Cha here means aspect. The aspect of being fixed. And I translate it as fixation. Selcha means, sel means clear. Cha means the aspect. So I translate it as clarity.
You said sel means clear?
Yeah. That's a Lama Wu Sel, for example. Clear light. His name is Clear Light. This picture is, where's the picture? I'm the little boy. Downstairs. Lama Yeshe's former life. Nice picture. So he says, if you want to know the difference between subtle dullness and obvious dullness, obvious dullness is where you've still got fixation on the object, but you lost its clarity. So what it means is you still have the object in your mind. Your mind is still fixed on the object, but it's getting very dull. And you know that one. It's where, okay, you didn't forget the object. That was the last one, right? You didn't forget the object, which is called forgetting the instruction, right? It doesn't have anything to do with that. You didn't lose the object. You still have the object in mind, but the clarity is gone. You have no clarity about it at all.
It's sort of like your mind becomes negative instead of positive.
Cloudy, dark, something like that.
Yeah. I mean,
he says it's like a veil drawn between you and the object.
So there's no detail.
No detail, yeah. No clarity. By the way, he says, don't forget, these are qualities of the mind and not of the object. It's not that the object is not clear, it's that the state of mind is not clear. It's not that you can't see the object very well, it's that your mind is fuzzy.
Michael, I'm sorry, my mind is fuzzy. I have a definition, but what is it? Is this nature that you're defining?
We're defining Qing. Oh. The third problem of meditation has two parts. Either the mind is too slowed down, or the mind is too speeded up, okay?
No.
And we're talking about the first part, the Qing part, where the mind is dull. And it's a very, very nasty, this is the worst enemy of meditation that there is, because the mind is fixed on the object, and then you buzz out, and it's very unclear. So what happens? You think you're doing great.
Feels awful.
Yeah, you don't feel refreshed when you get up. You just feel kind of stupid. You know? But anyway, it's like you did not lose the object. You have nature, you have fixation on the object, but it's not clear. Actually, your mind is not clear. Yeah.
Do you mean to distinguish? Do you mean number three is the worst enemy, or the first part of number three?
First part of the number three. Okay. If you want to say 3.1 and 3.2. I'm talking about this. Okay, I'm talking about Qing, which we call Qinghua. The full form is Qinghua. Qinghua has two kinds of Qinghua. There's obvious Qinghua, and there's tricky, subtle Qinghua. Obvious Qinghua is where you still have fixation, but you lost clarity.
Is this what this guy is? I mean, it's sometimes translated as sinking and scattering.
Yeah.
What?
Some people translate it as sinking and scattering. That's not bad. But you'll see many, many different translations. That's not bad.
Laxity?
Is just that Yeah, some people translate it like that.
So this would be the sinking part.
Yeah. So this is the obvious sinking. You can catch this pretty easily. You didn't lose the object. The object is still in your mental grasp, but there's no clarity to it at all. None. Okay, that's what? Which one is Qing and Ge? It's Qing. It's Qinghua in its obvious form. Now what about the subtle form? He said,
Nita, could you put your head down?
Oh, good pronunciation. Okay.
Got it?
Yes, thanks. Is that?
Intensity. Say, Narme.
Narme.
You can also call it strain. Nar is a very, very unusual word in Tibetan, and it means the quality that a steel knife gets when you. What's that process?
Temper it.
Yeah. After you temper a steel knife, it gets gnar. And I don't know how you're going to translate that. It's not sharp.
It's true to the blade. That's what tempered.
It's what called?
What?
Tempered. Tempered steel.
It's hard and flexible.
Hardened steel. Like they do it to sledgehammers and they do it to hammers. And there's some process. I don't know exactly what it is. You heat it to a certain temperature and it changes its quality. Steel is hard. But when you temper it, it gets like, I don't know how many times harder. It gets some kind of bite inside to it that it'll keep sharp for a long time. And they temper the blade part of a knife, and it won't lose its sharpness. That's called ngar. Okay, and there's no, I don't know what you're gonna call it in English, but it means there's no ngar. Now you gotta listen up. This one's important, okay? In the subtle form of Qing, in Qinghua, the full form of the word is Qinghua. In the subtle form of Qinghua, you do have fixation, and you do have clarity, but you don't have any intensity. You have not lost the object, and you have some clarity towards the object, but you don't have this extra, I don't know what you're going to call it. He says you can compare it to holding a cup in your hand firmly, or holding it, you know, when you kind of let go a little bit on the round part, and it spills. You know, like the cup didn't fall out of your hand. You still have the cup. You have clarity and you have fixation, but there's no strength. There's no firmness to it. And he compares it to that. There's no. Yeah, you're like losing your grip. Yeah, he says that. Like, he uses the same word. He says, you're about to lose it. You're about to drop it. So that means it's loose, shaky. Okay? And he says, the big danger is that you can continue this kind of dullness for many hours. You know? And you can think that you're doing a good meditation. And again, he says, I can't describe it to you very easily until you try it. But I'm afraid if you examine yourself well, I can tell you that I have this most of the time when I meditate. I've been doing it 20 years. I can stay on my butt for a long time, hours, and I can not move, and I can keep my mind on the object for a long time. But there's some kind of, he calls it water running under the ice. You know, there's something going on under where all these other shaky thoughts are always there, but it's just about to happen, you know. I'm just about to lose it. And I got no clarity. I can keep my mind on it, and it's just buzzing out. It's basically feeling good, feeling like I'm meditating. I do not lose the object. I wander, but I don't lose, you know, I still, generally the object is there most of the time. And I can even have some clarity towards it, but it's dull. It's low level.
This seems more dangerous than Qing.
He says it, this, but this is Qinghua.
Oh, I mean, but the obvious part.
This is Qinghua Chamo.
Okay.
And
mm-hmm.
It's very, very nasty. He says so. Chamo.
But you don't know when it's happening. You know afterwards that it was not. No,
we
know.
Have this debate going on between these two guys.
Why is it nasty?
Because it can be easily mistaken for
the real thing.
He says it's like a member of the family who turns against, who's an enemy, is a, how do you say it? An enemy getting into the inner circle. You know, a true traitor in the midst of a family. You see, or something like that. Someone who really wants to murder the rest of the family. You know, one person he's inside. He's taken as part of the family, but he's a traitor. Like Benedict Arnold. Like that CIA guy. No, he's in. He's in at the top. And he's working against it. And so the big problem is you mistake him for your friend. You know, it looks like what you're trying to get. And all that time he's working against you. Yeah.
Is there any real benefit to doing that kind of meditation?
I mean, he says real good for getting an animal reborn.
Yeah, I mean, in a practical sense, like you said, you've been meditating for 20 years.
Yeah.
No, I don't mean it in the case of you, but sorry. Yeah. Given that we're all going to be practicing and experiencing this, are we pretty much spinning our wheels when we just doing this kind of meditation, not really making any progress?
Yeah, I'll give you one. It says. Qinghua Chamo La Gomdu Tuna, if you mistake Qinghua Chamo for meditation, for true meditation, Jebu, the result is Suk Suk Meg Ki Gyu Tsam Duang Nim Dro.
Oh boy.
He says it won't even get you to a birth in the former formless realm. Remember we said that some meditations can?
Yeah.
Not only that, Sen Diu Yang Jing E Che Wa Dong, you will become forgetful in this life. And shirab misel du doa. Shirab misel du doa means the powers of your intellect will start to diminish. It makes you stupid.
It makes you like courage brings.
It does make you kind of like people have been on marijuana for a long time. If you've ever known somebody who's been on smoking marijuana for 20 years or something, it's kind of like that. I mean, steadily. He says it's nothing better than a meditation which is aimed at achieving an animal's birth in your next life. I wasn't making that.
So given that we only get this far, we're like better off not to meditate.
No, obviously not. You have to apply the
antidote.
Figure
it out. Yeah. When do you know to stop?
Ah, we're talking about it next.
Okay.
What's the antidote? The antidote. Oh, first I have to tell you what good, because the antidote is the same. Now I have to tell you about gopa. Gopa. Gopa means that agitated state of mind. And so Kapa goes into a long section where he's trying to distinguish Gopa, which is the long form of this word, Gopa, from Toa. Toa means where your mind wanders off to another object. Toa means where your mind runs to any other object than what you're meditating on.
Should I write that down?
The Tibetan?
Yeah.
But you don't have to know it in the other. You don't have to. You don't have to write that down. Troa is any wandering of your mind to another object while you're trying to meditate.
That's not
Gopa.
I'm going to explain to you the difference between Gopa and Troa, but you have to understand Gopa in terms of Troa, okay? Troa means any kind of wandering of your mind during meditation. And it can be to a virtuous object. Okay? Like, if you are supposed to be meditating on the Buddha's body, but your mind wanders to doing some charity for someone, that's Troa. It's a disturbance to your meditation. Okay? It's bad. It's a mistake. Another kind of Troa is where your mind wanders to someone you don't like. Okay? Like you start to think of somebody at work that said something to you yesterday. That's another kind of Troa. A third kind of Troa would be if your mind wandered to some object that is desirable to you, desire object. Some object that you desire. The example he gives is if you saw one of those Tibetan operas at noon, that's a TV for a Tibetan in the 15th century, okay? There would be these religious operas called Namtar. If you've ever seen one, I don't know, anybody ever seen one?
Yeah.
They go on for like 5 hours, the Dalai Lama comes and sits in the tent, and you wander around, the lady gets up and goes, just like a real opera, you know. And no one knows what's going on. You know, you can't hear the words. And, you know, but people wander around having a good time. And then he says, if at night, when you sit down to meditate, if that lady who is in the opera comes into your mind, that's Troa towards a desirable object, towards a pretty object. Some kind of object of the senses. Desire object. That last one is the only one which is good. So that's the difference between a general wandering of the mind and good. The big enemy is when, what does your mind wander to 90% of the time when you're meditating? Something you like.
Something bothers you.
Well, you're a special case. By the way, Papa says,
you feel preoccupied by something.
No, if you had a fight at work in the last 3 days, I mean, that's what you're going to think about. Right. And I know that because it happened to me many times.
Why does it have to be just fights? What about if you're worried about something?
Something like that. But what I'm saying is that Because wandering of your mind is so often, in the vast majority of cases, it's towards something you want, something you like. It doesn't mean, you know, you're going to go rob a bank. It means you start thinking about what's for breakfast, or you start thinking about what you're going to do when you get up. That's all gopa, because its object is a desirable thing.
So it's troa toward a desirable object, as opposed to troa toward the jerk at work.
Or towards a virtuous object. Mm-hmm. That's the point.
But it doesn't matter. You don't want to wander towards any of them.
Yeah, he says, actually, you don't want any of them. And actually, your enemy is troa. But because 90% of the time, it's towards something you want or something you like. This is the most common human tendency, is to, when you're trying to meditate, you start thinking about something you like. And it doesn't, you know, it's not like, I really want pancakes this morning, you know, which is what usually comes in my mind. But it's like, you just start thinking about the next thing, you know, right? You just start thinking about the next thing you're going to do after that, or what's the big thing I have, you know, which account I have to work on today. And
so if I'm sitting in meditation and I'm getting troa toward a holy object or toward an object that I hate, I'm not suffering from number three.
You are.
But
number three is called, the name for number three is restricted to that being distracted towards a desirable object. But obviously, if you get distracted towards a virtuous object, or if you get distracted towards an object you hate, that's obviously fault number three, problem number three.
So any kind of distraction.
Yeah, but the word for the problem is dullness and, what was the other one?
Agitation.
Yeah.
So that
gopa
is G-U-P-A or G-U?
The full form, I'm trying to make those short so you can remember them easily. And that's what they do in Buddhism, in Tibetan Buddhism. It's actually Chingwa Gopa. So I'm going to give you an example. He says, if you want to know the difference between fixation, clarity, we're talking about this one now, right? If you want to know the difference between whether there's an R or not, whether you have intensity or not, he says, it's where you're holding a cup or your rosary in your hand, and whether or not you're holding it with firmness or loosely. And he gives another example, which I like. He says, suppose you know a certain lama, a certain teacher, and generally you have some faith towards him, but it's not a very intense faith. It's not like you, when you see him, you start crying or something. You know, you like him, you respect him, but it's not like some kind of very intense faith. But he says, then you can sometimes get the experience that just suddenly, when you're with him, suddenly you just have this intense flash of faith towards him. This very intense feeling of, oh, this person is really someone special. You know, this is really someone incredible. That's the difference between having fixation and clarity, and having fixation and clarity with intensity. So he gives two examples. You've got fixation and clarity when you're holding the cup. Just by not dropping the cup, you've got it. But whether or not it's tight or not. And then the second example is that lama. You know, okay, generally you think he's a nice lama. But then you get to know him, he says something to you, and then suddenly you're like, try to increase the intensity.
Like plug it in.
Turn up the intensity. Hold the object tighter. Try to focus your mind more tightly. And I'll tell you, I mean, I found a big enemy that's not listed in these, which is just plain being tired. You know, I was meditating one night, deep, and I couldn't do anything right, and I was wondering, what's going on? And I searched my mind, and I said, you're tired. You know, you had a long day, you're tired. And I'll tell you, personal experience, you know, you can't meditate very well when you're tired, forget it. It's better to get up and do something virtuous, you know. You can't concentrate if you're tired. To really get good shamatha, you have to be sleeping well. You have to be eating well. It's very difficult. That's why some of you putting 2 a.m. on your thing or 12 midnight, No, some people prefer it and some people are better at it and some people have a work that doesn't allow them to do anything else. But I really think that morning is better if you can. And if you're going to be responsible or if you're going to be serious about your meditation, part of it is getting enough rest, because you never will. You know? And that's, again, for an American in New York, that's difficult. You know, it's difficult for me. But if you want to get shamatha, you better count on getting enough rest, because otherwise you won't get it. Who gets enough rest? I don't know. It's part of the game. You're going to have to decide what you want. You might have to give up something else to get enough rest to have a good meditation in the morning, to get up early. It's a big part, actually. And if you don't do it, you never will. And if you don't do it in this class, probably you'll never have another reason to. I mean, there'll probably be nothing that will inspire you to do it suddenly. You know, if you don't get in the habit during this 6 weeks, I'd say you probably will fail. You know, so it's important. So that's that. I'll give you a homework. Sanshi Bhagi Jamshimeta Sham Rira Vinshi Nyande Gyanpati Sange Shindu Mithe Uwagi Jogunanda Shimba This is the end of Class 5.